shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night from 10 to 1 on the West Coast, 1 to 4 on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Welcome to our program. And tonight we're going to have Reverend Dave Castorini on to discuss what he calls the continued secular influence on our young people vis-a-vis these questions regarding evolution. We're going to be talking to him about that. And we also have some stories on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and rehab visits. So we're probably going to have Margaret Gray or Bobby Dooley in to talk about that one this evening. We want to remind you that we're online at philhendryshow.com on Phil TV and HD, and we're going to start doing our football Sundays again. That will be the late game on Sunday. So if you join us on Phil TV and HD on Sundays for probably either the second game or for the evening game, and we'll let you know on the website. Join us starting this Sunday. And then Bobby Dooley's blog, is that right, Bud?
Yeah, she's going to start the Bobby Dooley blog, going to be daily.
Okay, so the Bobby Dooley blog is also daily at philhendryshow.com. So a lot of stuff going on over there. And you need a backstage pass, but once you get the backstage pass, well, then you can say you have the backstage pass, you know. And
yeah, you can be. It feels good.
Feels good to have one. Thank you, Robert. And even better than it feeling good, it actually does something. You can access our archives and our video cast and so forth. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Reverend Dave Castorini is joining us from Phoenix, Arizona this evening. And first of all, Dave, how are you tonight?
Phil, I'm doing really good. And Merry Christmas to you and happy holidays to everybody listening tonight.
You were in Indianapolis earlier in the week, or earlier last week, talking with the organizers of a new exhibit at the Indianapolis Zoo?
Well, yes. The new exhibit that's opening at the Indianapolis Zoo, it's an orangutan exhibit. We spoke to some of the key supporters of this. It's about a $20 million exhibit there in Indianapolis. And there's 4 acres of exhibit space there. It also has, at the heart of this 64-acre property, which is the Indianapolis Zoo, it's an exhibit that will include an all-season atrium. They have 90-foot ceiling, a jungle gym, and it's very friendly, I think, child-friendly, I should say, and family-friendly for people to go and to look at these animals that are fascinating for human beings. And they're not only fascinating for human beings, I think they are a way of sending a message that I think is a destructive message to our young people. And that's why we went to Indianapolis and spoke with some of the people who have been key in making this money available.
Well, you don't think that this exhibit should open. Isn't that the crux of this?
We don't think the exhibit should open in its present state, and I'll tell you why. Phil, our youth ministry, and we have been in existence now for 11 years, and we have ministered the gospel of Jesus Christ to some 3 million young people. We feel that we have been instrumental in bringing to Jesus Christ some 2 million of those young people that we have ministered to. We believe that these kinds of exhibits are a secular way to entice our young people away from the basic message of the Bible, which is that God made man in his image. God did not make us in the image of an animal. He made us in the image of God Almighty. We are the reflection of the eternal. And this exhibit, like so many others, we were in San Diego when they opened the gorilla exhibit that they had, is a very insidious way of getting young people, especially, to accept the message of so-called evolution.
All right, so this is at the very crux of this.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anything. We're not trying to hide anything here, Phil.
I know that, but this is at the very crux of your opposition to this orangutan exhibit. And again, you mentioned that this is not the first all over America, all over the world. Zoos feature exhibits, primate exhibits, that are very popular with human beings because the primate often, the primate animal, is so reflective of our own behavior, at least physical.
Well, and that's the, I think that is the alluring part of this, and I think it's the reason why there's so much fascination. They are, in their own way, the primates, these orangutans, or gorillas, chimpanzees, they are, as animals, pretty close in terms of mannerism, physical mannerism. They have a way of mimicking human behavior, of looking at humans and then turning that around and entertaining us, much the same way a parakeet will hear a human voice and then repeat what the human says or a minor bird. I can remember going into my very first dentist when I was a little boy growing up in Scottsdale, Arizona. My mother would take me to a dentist and had a minor bird in the office, and this minor bird was so accurate in how this bird mimicked the human voice. He mimicked the voice of the receptionist, and it was so funny because I would hear the receptionist's voice, and of course I would get up and think that it was time for me to go in to see the doctor or think she was saying something. It was actually the minor bird.
And well, you're I think you may be, well, I don't, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I think you might be misapplying that to chimpanzees. I don't think that they're mimicking humans. I think that's their basic mannerism.
Well, I think what you have to do, Phil, is open your mind a little bit. I think you've been told a lot of things by science because science wants you to believe that this is organic to the chimpanzee and that somehow one can imagine human beings at one time looking like a chimpanzee, looking like an orangutan, and behaving like them because look at how they behave now. So obviously, and I don't think that we've given enough thought to what I think is a very much more likely scenario that they mimic what they see. So
in other words, the chimpanzee is much more like a parrot, a minor bird, some of these animals that you say mimic the qualities of human voice, for instance. A chimpanzee or an orangutan in this case mimics human behavior, and you're saying we're told it's organic because the evolutionists, you know.
Well, exactly. I think that we've gone so far away from God's message and that we have allowed God's message to be polluted with a kind of science babble. So people will say, oh, look at the chimpanzee, the orangutan, look at how they behave. They look so human. And, of course, my response is, of course they look human. They're mimicking the behavior of the humans that are standing there outside. For instance, the exhibit area could be a zoo. It could be some kind of a primate exhibit area. They're mimicking the behavior of people. And why are they doing that? So a human will throw them a peanut or throw them a banana or something like this. So when we go, Phil, and I talk to some of the supporters of the Indianapolis Zoo or the orangutan exhibit there, and also the Washington, D.C., the National Zoo, had opened up a primate house some 6-7 years ago. We were there protesting that. And
What are you saying when you protest? Are you saying don't open up these, you don't want these?
We don't want these exhibits unless the true story of the primate is told to humans, because we're told every time one of these exhibits opens up, the message is the same. Do you see man's connection to this animal? Do you see that we did evolve from an animal like this? We did evolve. We did not come from God directly in the Garden of Eden, as the Bible tells us. We did not come from Adam and Eve, as the Bible tells us. We evolved from these apes. Do you see that is the case here? And all over America, I think that message is the same.
Well, are you talking about a conspiracy here? Are you talking about...
Well, it's not a conspiracy. I think it's just the way that these scientists think. I think it's their way, especially when you get a lot of the schools and the field trips, and they bring the kids. And I know that the Indianapolis Public Schools are planning a great many field trips to the new zoo to see this orangutan exhibit. Obviously, it's a big event. It's a $20 million project. It's a large exhibit.
That stands to reason that you're going to bring the kids to see this. It's part of their science.
Well, it's part of their indoctrination into evolution. That's the part that we don't like. And
Reverend Pastorini, that evolution is taught in schools. And by the way, we're talking to...
Yes, I do.
All right, hold on. We're talking to Reverend David Castorini of the Castorini Youth Ministries about the new orangutan exhibit at the Indianapolis Zoo and how he feels this is the insidious way that the secularists get kids to believe in evolution. You know that evolution is taught at high schools, it's taught in public schools, it's taught as science in our universities.
No, I'm aware of all of that.
Okay, so it's not like nobody is trying to sneak it in, you know?
No, they're not trying to sneak it in, but what they're doing is outside of the classroom, outside of the public school, outside of the outside of the public arena of education, and beyond the reach of their parents, these kids are getting the evolution message hammered home, and hammered home almost not on a daily basis, perhaps, but every chance they get. So that by the time a young person reaches high school or reaches college, they're not only believers in the theory of evolution. They've lost some of their belief in the spark of God and man. And
you really think so? You think so? In other words, if a devout Christian who believes in what you believe, the story of Eden, creationism, however you want to put it.
Well, yes, we do believe that. We believe that God in every man is the spark of God that began in the Garden of Eden.
Okay, all right, fine. That a devout Christian can believe that and still at the same time understand the theories, if you wish, of evolution, how it is understood, so that they can get a degree in science. Because if they don't grasp these things, they're not going to be graduating with any kind of science degree.
Phil, I know a great many biologists that are creationists. Okay,
I'm sure that you do, and in fact, I know a couple. But they recognize they have to understand certain science that's taught.
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't know what you mean by science. It's a theory. And we believe that you can be a valid biologist, you can be a valid zoologist, you can be an animal behaviorist, and still believe in creationism. You don't have to believe. You can believe that man came from the Garden of Eden after Eve ate the apple from the snake, and they had lots and lots of kids from only the two of them, and there was incest. There had to have been. You can believe all of that and still get a degree in science. So what we think is happening right now is the kids are being once again indoctrinated into evolution by going to these monkey exhibits and these orangutan exhibits. We think it's wrong, we think it's destructive, and we want to see it tailed, curtailed a bit or scaled back just a bit.
All right, David Castorini is with us from the Castorini Youth Ministries in Phoenix, Arizona. His concern is this, and this is opening this week. It's in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's the new orangutan exhibit there, a $20 million 4-acre exhibit that he feels is one more attempt by secularists to convince young kids evolution is the actual reality of life. And that actually these primate houses and these monkey exhibits are the secularists' attempt at showing just how closely connected to these apes we are. That there's just, that's what the message is when you go to the zoo. 877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445. And we'll be back with more from Reverend David Castorini here on the secular message of these orangutan exhibits here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, along with David Castorini from the Castorini Youth Ministries. And we're talking about the primate houses. I guess we could talk about any zoo that has a primate house, David, you know?
But it depends, Phil, on the amount of, you see, it depends on the amount of publicity. It depends on how, what kind of a push is on, what is the relationship between that zoo, between that wild animal park, between that animal rescue or shelter or what have you. What is their relationship between the themselves and the scientific community? Some zoos have primate houses the same way they have an elephant exhibit or a lion exhibit or wild birds. But some places have a primate exhibit that is front and center and you know there is something going on. You know that there is some effort on the part of the scientific community to break through some kind of resistance they're having from the schools as to belief in evolution. And I think that's what's going on in Indianapolis.
Why?
I think Indianapolis has a very well-developed religious community. I think the even in the public schools, it's very well understood that very devoutly Christian families send their children to these public schools in Indianapolis. I think that Indianapolis is unique in that while it does have very good public schools and it has a very good public infrastructure in terms of education and science, they influence their children religiously much, much more than other communities. And so the scientific community of Indianapolis has decided to just go take an orangutan and put that orangutan front and center in front of a kid and say, this is what you used to be. Doesn't matter what Jesus said. Doesn't matter what the Bible said.
And yeah, but you're inferring that from simply an exhibit at a zoo. You're inferring that from...
No, I'm inferring that from a $20 million orangutan exhibit that takes a primate and sticks it right in the face of an Indianapolis school child and says, take a good long look, because that's what you are. That's what I'm inferring, and I think I'm right.
I'm trying to, I'm going through this in my head. I mean, I think you really have to, other than the fact that they've opened up the primate house, I think you would have to have some evidence.
Oh, I thought the evidence, Phil, is all around us in that. Again, I told you, Indianapolis is a very fundamentally sound religious community, protecting their children, even in the face of the public schools. And so the scientific community in Indianapolis, it grates on their nerves. They can't take it any longer. They've got to find themselves an orangutan or a gorilla or something that they can park right in front of a kid and scare that child half to death, telling him, you were an ape. You were an ape. Now repeat after me. I was an ape. I think it's wrong. I think it's destructive. And we're trying to save the school children of Indianapolis and from this happening elsewhere.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Is that the message of these zoos, especially these zoos that have these primate houses? Go ahead, sir, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'm actually from Indianapolis, and
yes,
sir. I'm also a devout Christian myself. Any zoo I've ever been to, primate-wise, I have never, not once, read or been talked to or said to, this is what you were, this is what you are. I've never received that message whatsoever. Like I said,
Look, can I ask the young man what his name is, Phil? I did not get this young man's name.
I apologize. I got it and I forgot. What's your name, sir?
Andrew.
It's Andrew.
Yeah, Andrew, this is Pastor Castorini. How are you?
Good, you?
I'm very good, thank you. Andrew, when you look... If you've been to a primate house, you've been to the zoos, and you've looked at these monkeys, when you look at that monkey, do you feel as if you're looking into your past? Do you feel as if you've been coerced into enjoying that ape because that ape, they want you to think, was you?
Not at all.
Yes. Not at all?
No,
well, how many times have you... Well, when you go to a zoo... How many times have you been to a zoo?
Plenty of times.
All right. And you don't go... You go to the ape house, don't you? You go to the primate house, don't you?
Sure.
Okay. The reason we do is because that animal is interesting to look at. And the reason why it's interesting to look at is because it has human mannerisms. You're told that it has human mannerisms because that's the way it was created. But it's really just a mimic trying to suck you in, you see?
Well, I mean, I also look at the sharks and the polar bears.
Well, yeah, but a shark doesn't cross its leg. Yeah, but a shark doesn't scratch its armpits and all the things that a monkey does. So when you look at that monkey, you can't help but say, it looks like me, or it behaves like me.
Right, but what this young man is saying, while all of that may be true... He doesn't feel as if that's what he used to be.
Well, I have a hard time believing that when you look at a monkey scratching its armpits and you don't think that's something that you might have done 5 million years ago looking like that. That's my point.
All right, Andrew, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be right back.
Andrew.
At least I hope I didn't look like that.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Going places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And we go places on Phil TV and HD. If you have a backstage pass, you can watch us tonight on our high-definition video cast, as well as listen to the show this evening on your local Phil Henry Show affiliate. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention to you. In our shop at philhenryshow.com, we have downloads now of our Best of 1994 CD. This is from Miami. This is, we're talking 17 years ago, so some rare stuff there, and you can download the whole CD, or you can download individual cuts, so head over there and grab that. All right, on the line with me, David Castorini. We've got this gentleman, Andrew, calling back, David, with a question. I apologize to him beforehand, Andrew. I couldn't quite formulate your question. David, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm right here.
Okay, Andrew? Go ahead and ask your question, sir.
Okay, my question to you, sir, is, you're asking me if when I look at an orangutan or a monkey of whatever sort,
yes, that's correct.
Do I feel that that's what I used to be?
Or my used to question, look like, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My question to you is, do you feel that's what you used to look like?
I think it's a great question. It's a great question, Andrew. I think the secularists are trying to entice us into believing, because that ape that we're looking at, that monkey or what have you, is scratching itself, it's crossing its legs, it's doing all these very human things. I think the secularist is trying to entice us into believing that at one time, you know, Andrew and David Castorini, that's what we were. We were who we are, but we looked like an ape. And when you ask me the question, do I feel I look like that? I believe in Jesus Christ and the message of the gospel and in God the Father. I believe in I believe in God's word when he tells us of the Garden of Eden in Genesis. I believe all of that. But I can feel the tug of that ape. You see?
What do you mean the tug of the ape? What is that?
Well, I can feel the... I see what the allure of the secularist message is, and it's this, that we can still be God's children and look like a baboon. I find that degrading, and yet people are enticed, they are seduced by that message. So to answer your question, there are days when I'm at my lowest, when I feel so disconnected from God, that yes, I do. I go to the zoo, I look at a monkey, and I say, I might as well be that. Sure, I'll buy it. I look like that.
That's an interesting answer. Andrew, did that give you the answer? Does that help you?
Well, you know, Phil, it's an interesting answer. It's a human answer. It's a human answer.
I don't know that I've ever...
I was just saying, you know, if he didn't feel that way, I was just wondering how he could think that everybody else would feel that way. Because, like I said, I'm a devout Christian myself, and when I
yes,
look
sir.
At an ape or a baboon, no, I don't feel that I ever was that or that I do look like that. Like he said earlier, you know, they are mimicking our mannerisms. They are animals.
Do you ever feel that so low that when you go to the zoo, an ape is superior to you? You feel, you know what, I might as well take orders from that ape for all the good it's done me, for all the good life's done me. Do you ever feel that bad?
No,
that's what I'm talking about, the seduction.
Well, I mean, depression, I understand that.
That's exactly right. So you feel, Andrew, so bad some days, you go to the zoo to try to cheer yourself up, to say, well, at least I'm superior to some stinking baboon, but I feel so bad today, that baboon might as well be... you know, reading me the riot act. Do you ever feel that way?
No, honestly, I don't. I think you're not necessarily getting confused here, but I mean, they're, like I said, it's an animal, and God put man in control of animal.
And that's right there. That's a wonderful point you just made, because right there, can you imagine how low a man's got to get to feel that he no longer has control over an animal, that the animal might as well be hiring, firing, and running, CEO?
Well, okay, I can imagine depression. Are you saying depression in the Christian religion is the devil?
No, yes, but the devil is the theory of evolution. And to believe in evolution is to see an ape and say, that ape is, he's got it all over me. Everything that ape is, I'm not. And it's better than me.
In the theory of evolution, then, where did the ape come from?
Well, in the theory of evolution, see, what I'm saying is, we came from an ape-like creature. That ape today comes from a different line of hominids. You have to understand what it is the secularists are trying to feed you. They're trying to feed us a whole fancy dance, you know.
All right, so, Andrew, I don't know that I understand, but if you do...
No, he understands. You don't, Phil, because you're a secularist.
Because I'm a secularist, I don't understand. I understand what you mean by depression. Andrew, does that answer your question for you?
For the most part, yes.
All right, Brian. Thank you very much, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. And let's go over to Travis. Hello, Travis. You're on the Phil Henry Show here with Pastor Castorini.
Hey, I answered his question.
Very good, sir. I think you answered his question.
I could hear a little bit of confusion in his voice. I hope that I was able to help him.
Travis, go ahead, sir.
All right. Well, as far as the primate, monkey, ape, what have you family, humans are most closest to the chimpanzee. As far as where your DNA comes in, it is. I guess you could say they mimic us, but
they do.
We are close to the chimpanzee. You know, like I said, as far as DNA.
Well, I understand that, sir. I mean, that's very interesting. I mean, we can get into discussions of the DNA similarity, but what I'm trying to tell you is, any primate. Conjures in the heart of man a need to feel connected to that creature, because even if it's not a chimpanzee, if it's a baboon, an orangutan, a gorilla, or any of these other lemur, monkey, this kind of thing, they all have human behavior. They have five digits. They scratch themselves. You could almost, you know what I mean? There you go. You can almost imagine one of them lighting up a cigarette and sitting there and relaxing. With, you know, that's how human they look.
They do that every day, right?
Well, exactly. So when you see one, as I have, when the devil has my soul, I want to say, I wish that ape ran my life, because I'm so lost. I'm lower than an ape. I'm lower than that monkey.
I'm sorry that you feel that way, but I mean, I'm sorry that you
have you never felt that way? Have you never felt that way? Have you never?
Humans have a strong, strong bond with animals. I mean, that's just one thing with animals and humans. Like, that is one thing about humans. They have a connection with other animals, some more than others.
Well, of course.
Now,
we've domesticated, but.
Excuse me for saying this. I remember when I went to the zoo on a field trip, and it may have been 6th grade or 5th grade. There was it's the baboon, I think, the one that's got the big blue red butt.
The big blue butt. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was too young to know about this at the time, but this monkey was sitting here. Excuse me, but was masturbating in front of the glass.
See, that's
a bunch of kids.
Well, now, that's the same thing that humans do. And
well,
that's what,
I don't have to sit in front of a group of people and, you know, do my thing.
No, you don't. But there are perverted human beings that do that. And when we see a baboon do that in front of school kids, there's a dark part of us that recognizes ourselves. And
what are you talking about now?
Phil, I'm talking to this gentleman here. Okay? And
I know you're talking to the gentleman, but what do you mean when a baboon masturbates in front of children, we recognize ourselves?
We see the pervert in ourselves. Okay? See, the secularist is trying to get us to believe in evolution. And so when a baboon sits there and masturbates in front of kids, you have that feeling in yourself like, boy, that could be me.
No, I have never felt that way.
Yeah, no.
No.
Well, I'm not saying we've done... No, Travis, I'm not saying, Phil, I'm not saying we've done it. I'm saying that could be me.
No, that could not be me. No.
I think that's... Phil, I think that's human arrogance. That's
No, 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 Pastor, that's not human arrogance. No, that can't be me. I don't identify with that.
Well, all right. Okay, fine.
Well, that's
opinion. Yeah,
but
that's true.
On to one more thing. I'd like to bring this up.
Well, I mean, when you saw that baboon masturbate in front of those kids, what did you think about the baboon? Did you want to kill it?
No.
Or did you say to yourself, my God, that's me?
No, by far did I say, my God, that's me. I mean,
you did not.
The monkey doesn't know any better. It's not like, you know, he actually knows what he's doing.
Right. Yeah. Apes are dead. They have no constraint. Yeah, but there's no constraint there. Yeah. Listen, Travis, great call. Thank you very much, sir. Good point about the DNA, the chimpanzee, and so forth. Thank you, sir, for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL.
Phil, I want to say one thing about DNA. They have brought this DNA question into a lot of scientific discussions because we are all fascinated with DNA now. We are in love with DNA. DNA has solved crimes. DNA is able to identify people. We are very much into DNA. We love it. And so why not drop that DNA argument into the chimpanzee reality and say, oh, and one other thing, Mr. and Mrs. Human Being, the chimp and the human, well, we've got the same DNA. We might as well be brother and sister. Now, can you imagine that? Can you imagine telling human beings? And they're doing it. The secularists are doing it, Phil. They're telling us that the chimpanzee is like a cousin or a nephew.
No, the DNA, they're talking about in terms of the animal kingdom, you know, the connection between different lines of animal. I mean, they found connection between, for instance, the sea lion and wolves.
I don't know what you're talking about there. I'm talking about...
I'm talking about the strands of DNA that connects different species. I mean, this is the marvelous thing about DNA that's teaching us. It's taking us almost all the way back to... the creation.
And I've got a lot to say about that, too, because I think that is just black. I think that is black. That is as black as the devil. That is as black.
You think knowledge is as black as the devil?
When it takes us back to the secret of creation, yes, I do.
All right, take a break here. There's a good point to take a break on. When it takes us back to creation, knowledge is blackness. 877-876-PHIL. Pastor David Castorini on the line from the Castorini Youth Ministries. And your phone call is coming up at 877-876-7445. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You know what I mean, if I let a monkey do that.
Hold on for just a second here. On the line with me is Reverend David Castorini from the Castorini Youth Ministries. We talk about this all began as a discussion of the Indianapolis Zoo's new orangutan exhibit opening, a $20 million 4-acre orangutan exhibit set to open in 2014. And you were in Indianapolis, Reverend Castorini, talking, as you say, to some of the main supporters. You don't want this to open.
We don't want it to open, Phil, in the way they want to open. It's due to open in 2014. We want to keep children as far away from it as we possibly can. I have to be honest with you. I understand that they want to do this, and I guess they're going to do what they want to do. But the very clear secular message of this orangutan expose, this orangutan exhibit, is to get as many school kids to look at it and get the message right away, real clear, and completely unclouded. We're monkeys. We used to be that right there. You're a monkey. I'm a monkey. And that's what we are. And God's message about the Garden of Eden is a big joke. And let's just all go and check out our cousins, the monkeys. Now, that one gentleman who said the DNA of the chimpanzee is like humans, that is just about as wild a thing as I've ever heard, because now I'm supposed to look at a chimpanzee, and I got to think of this thing as some kind of a blood brother?
I don't think that's it. I mean, you're looking at it completely wrong. You know,
well, what else is DNA but a connection in terms of relation?
No, but you're looking at it. There is a DNA connection between ourselves and monkeys that is more of a sort of a scientific underpinning of species to species. It's not that the thing is our brother or our cousin.
No, I understand that, Phil. But the average person thinks that, and that's the message that keeps getting pounded into the heads of our young people. Not the message of the Garden of Eden. Not the message of God in Genesis, creating the world, creating man, and creating woman in his image. Not the message of, and you know, woman was created not only in God's image, she was created in man's image. So that's been lost. We've got man, we have God, we have man, and then we have, in many ways, kind of a subset, the female, who is the connection between man and the animal world. And that's the other part that has not been...
Well, I don't understand that one, you know.
Well, that's the other...
All right, well, hold on. Let me get to a phone call here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Bill on the Phil Hendry Show with Pastor Castorina. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
I'm kind of confused the way this pastor's talking. It's like one way he's talking that he agrees that we came from monkeys, and then he turns around and talks, you know, like we're in the image of God. You know, there's only one way that we came, and that was in the image of God. It's in the Bible.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I don't mean to say that
you were talking to the gentleman earlier, that when you get low and down and the devil's got your soul, you feel like a monkey, or a monkey should rule you. You know, first off, being
don't
a pastor,
you shouldn't be
talking like that.
Well, no, sir. I'm saying I always return to God. I always return to Jesus. I always return to the gospel. I'm never lost from the gospel. And I do that when I am feeling down. I think God
is you're putting it out as the devil's got your soul. You feel so low that a monkey rules you. Okay, first off, being a pastor, you shouldn't be saying that. You know, the devil's got your soul, because once you go towards God and accept God in your soul, the devil can't have you unless you give it
up. You're absolutely right, sir. If I led you to believe that God has lost his grip on my soul, I misspoke. What I meant to say was, when the devil, and there are days, you know, even in the life of Jesus, there are days when the devil stands and the devil tempts. We know this. That's why we say the Lord's Prayer. But on those days, I feel almost as if I would just rather give the keys of the car to an ape. I mean, literally. And that scares me, that I would literally turn the keys of my automobile over to a chimp or a baboon. And that's when I know I need God.
Well, for you,
well, wait a minute.
Pastor,
wait a...
You shouldn't be feeling that low, you know, even though the devil oppresses you,
yes,
you make it sound like he took your soul, and you feel you're as low as lower than a monkey. You know, that's what I heard from you when you was talking to the gentleman. I think his name's Arthur.
Yes, sir. That's true. Yes, I do. But I'm never so low. I never stay in that sub-ape category for long. I'm able to rise up and take God's hand again. You might say I'm not even dancing with the devil. I'm just dancing with the notion that I'd like to just give up on being human and let an ape call the shots in my life. That's low. Well, you're laughing at me.
Pastor, are scaring me. Yeah, I've been raised in churches since I was 14 years old. And I've never heard a pastor talk as low as you have.
No, sir. Are you saying that pastors don't get depressed? Of course they do. And as we know from the Bible, some of God's most beloved prophets were tempted by the demon, and the Lord himself was. But so I don't feel, sir, that that's so much the sin as it's giving in to it, you see. There are days when I look at a chimp, and I think that chimp has everything I don't have. It's got it all. It's got it all and more.
Well, if you look at a chimp, are you saying, do you think the chimp has a soul?
There are some days I get so black in my own heart that I think that chimp is closer to Jesus than I am.
Wow. Well, that's just... Wow.
Mr. Phil, I'm not going to get in a religious argument with the pastor.
I don't want to argue. I'm just saying, sir. No, I don't want to argue. I'm saying there are days when I think that that monkey has more of God going on than I ever will.
I don't understand that because, you know, I used to be in the church. I haven't been in the church because of my job right now.
Okay.
But I don't
there
feel
are
that
times,
low that a monkey rules
I feel so
me.
Low that a monkey can rule over me and all that I am. And that an ape, I might as well give the Bible to the ape and let him do the homily.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we thank Reverend David Castorini for being with us, and I'm sure we'll have the pastor on with us. We have not had Pastor William Renick on. We will as the Christmas season approaches and becomes, more imminent, but that was an interesting conversation. Again, this is the new orangutan exhibit at the Indianapolis Zoo. It opens in 2014. I'd go to see it if I were in Indianapolis. It sounds fascinating. A reminder that we're online at philhendryshow.com. Head on over, get a backstage pass, watch our show tonight, watch it every night, watch us how we perform the Phil Hendry Show on Phil TV in HD, and that also affords you access to the archives, to our Bobby and Bobby Dooley and Ted Bell blogs, to our news feed, to all of our webisodes, to daily podcasts. There's a lot going on there at philhendryshow.com. Now, the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, the tragic events of December 7th, 1941, will be tomorrow. It will be the 70th. It's amazing that we are now well past the 50-year mark. We're on our way to a 100-year mark. And you think that a historic event like Pearl Harbor, it was part of my parents' generation, so I grew up hearing about it as the son of... World War II people. Now we have, of course, grandkids, and now the great-grandkids, and it gets sort of further and further away from the generation that experienced it directly, those combat veterans, as well as the people that were at home during those very, very dark days of World War II and the very beginning stages of World War II. On the line with us is Harvey Wireman. Harvey is an attorney, retired, lives in San Marino, and was put through law school by the U.S. Marines, was also a Marine in the Second World War. And I imagine, Harvey, it was because of Pearl Harbor that you enlisted, correct?
Well, yes. Phil, that is correct. I enlisted in the Marines on, to be specific, on January 15th of 1942. And I told them that it was my interest at that time to be a JAG officer, which is a lawyer. And the Marines said that they needed me in basic training and to be a Marine rifleman, but I would go through school once I completed the service. So my experience with the Marine Corps was with Chester Nimitz. I went to Tarawa and eventually were... Left and went home with wounds before they went to Okinawa. So,
were you at Iwo Jima?
No, I was not there. But it was at Tarawa and Marshall Islands, but not there.
Now, Pearl Harbor. You know, you were a young man when that occurred, and were you in the United States on the mainland? I mean,
yeah, I was in California.
Okay. And what do you recall?
Well, you know, what
I recall is what everyone recalls. You know, it was a shock. You didn't think that it would ever happen. You, the first thing you asked was, who do the Japanese think they're, what do they think they're doing? You know, they're going to, all they did was make people mad, you know, and I suspect some of the smarter Japanese knew that. That's all they did was make us mad. See, if I could give you a personal point of view.
Go ahead.
See, I don't appreciate very much the Pearl Harbor memorial because, yeah, I don't like being reminded of a time when we got caught with our pants down, you know. And every year when they have this, when I was called today by your producer and he said, would you come on the program? And I said, I'd be happy to, but I don't want to keep going down this same road of, well, let's remember when we got our rear ends kicked. Let's keep...
Well, do you think that's what it is, or is it just memorializing the people that lost their lives?
Well, we can memorialize the people that lost their lives. There's a memorial to the Arizona in Pearl Harbor right now that people can go and visit, and that's appropriate. But the same thing with this 9/11. You know, we have the anniversary of let's remember when we got our rear ends kicked so thoroughly and so good that we were walking around like stumble bums for about 6 months. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. And I, for one, and I'm, you know, I'm very, very, very old man, Phil. You know, I'm going to be, I just turned 90. So, I don't know how much longer I've got, but I'm here to tell.
Well, I mean, I hope you're with us for a long time.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment, but the fact is, before I go, I'd like to know that I want to quit having these annual reminders of how we took a Japanese boot right square between the legs. Because let's be honest, that's what we're talking about.
Well, I don't know.
I do know.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying we're celebrating being defeated.
Well, no, we're not celebrating being defeated, but we're going back every year, and we're saying, do you remember how it felt when we took a lead-toed boot to the testicles?
And okay, can I just remind you, we got a, women listening, children listening.
All right, I didn't say anything that was, and I apologize if I was out of line, but I
well, I mean, you're talking, the language here, it's getting a little salty, and I recognize that you were a soldier.
Well, I wasn't a soldier. I was a Marine. There's a difference there.
All right. I mean, you were a Marine. So what I'm saying then is that, if we could watch the language. But what you're talking about, Pearl Harbor, the commemoration of Pearl Harbor is a negative thing.
You know, it's very negative. And I think it does the country a disservice to every year tell the little ones and tell the kids that weren't there and the people that weren't there, as you were just saying, Phil. And every year we say to them, and now we'd like to tell you about a time when we got caught with our pants down. And, you know, to give you an example, it would be like, if you don't want me to say the lead line toe, it's like going into the bathroom, finishing, and you look and there's no toilet paper. And so you get up and you're looking for toilet paper. And you even have to go out into the hall to find it because it's usually in a closet where your wife puts it, right, or something. And as you're going down the hall with no pants on, what do you think happens? Here comes your kids. Here comes a plumber. Everybody's in the house. That's what happened to us on Pearl Harbor. Are you going to remember that day? Are you going to say, boy, I sure remember the day that the kids came home, little children saw me with no pants on? Are you going to remember that and celebrate that?
Of course not. And I don't even think that that's close to comparable.
Excuse me?
I don't see how...
Were we not caught unprepared?
Yes, we were.
Okay, if you don't have toilet paper in the bathroom, are you unprepared?
Yes, you're unprepared. You're giving this a... You're making this sound...
Let me finish, Phil, because see what you're doing is you're trying to find fault, but you really can't find fault because what I'm saying is true. when we go back and we celebrate Pearl Harbor and we, you know...
Well, we're not celebrating it.
No, what I'm saying is when we remember the Pearl Harbor attack, we are basically saying every year I want to remember being so stupid that there was no toilet paper in the bathroom, so I had to walk outside with no pants on at all while kids came home from school and women were showing up for my wife's garden party. I'm in the hallway, not having wiped, by the way, looking for toilet paper. Now, you may not like that comparison, but friend, that's exactly what it was. It was the lack of preparation. We got caught with our pants down, and every year I'm forced to remember it, and I'm getting sick and tired of it. I'm almost 90 years of age. I fought for this country in the World War, and now on top of that, they want me to remember when I got my rear end handed to me by a... Well, I'm not allowed to say, you know, a word anymore.
And, what word?
Well, it's three letters. It's four letters. Starts with a J.
I'd rather you not, yeah.
All right. I got my rear end handed to me by the Nips.
No, not Nips either. Japanese, okay?
I apologize, but I... Okay.
And I you know what, Harvey, I will tell you this. I understand how you feel. It's tough to remember a defeat, but isn't it true that when we look clear-eyed and soberly at these defeats, don't we see in them the lessons that we eventually did learn that led to victory?
No, I don't see anything in Pearl Harbor that helps me, that takes me to victory. What I see in Pearl Harbor is a bunch of people standing around with their thumb up there, you know what? And we got blown to bits. What I learned from that? Here's what I learned from that. Bombs blow ships up. There, I learned that. That's great.
Well, you also said that we were unprepared. Did we not learn something about preparation?
No, here's what we learned. We were lucky enough that our aircraft carriers weren't there. We learned that the ships that got bombed were destroyers, so we didn't need them anyway. If we'd been prepared, we probably would have protected the destroyers and probably would have let them bomb the aircraft carriers. I'm telling you, it was a disaster. And it still is a disaster because we keep remembering it instead of forgetting it and moving on, just like that 9/11.
All right, Harvey Wireman with us as we talk about Pearl Harbor, 70-year anniversary tomorrow on the East Coast, we are into tomorrow. 70 years since the date December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese Air Force and the Japanese Navy attacked, the Japanese Naval Air Force, Naval Air Arm, I should say, attacked Pearl Harbor and visited all of that destruction and all of that death upon those sailors and those people there that day. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445 with Harvey Wireman, a World War II veteran and now a retired attorney, as we talk about Pearl Harbor and what he says is a very unfortunate thing, having to remember a defeat every single year. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. Phil Hendry Show.
Hold on. I didn't say that, though.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Harvey Wireman, an attorney and a veteran of the Second World War, a Marine Corps veteran, about the attack on Pearl Harbor. And Harvey, and I know that it's been a long time, and you were a young man at that time living in California. You enlisted as a result of Pearl Harbor, as we heard so many people did back then. You're now saying that you don't like the constant hearing about Pearl Harbor because you don't like hearing about a defeat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, look, I joined the Marine Corps. And the reason why I joined the Marine Corps is because I wanted to be, as they say in the, they do it in the commercial, I wanted to be with the best. I wanted to fight with the very best. I wanted to fight with the riflemen, the best rifle riflemen in the war were Marines. Now, let me tell you something. I don't like being reminded that my country, the United States of America, took a boot to the rear end, you know? And every time we talk about 9/11 and Pearl Harbor and this and another, all of that, that we're going, oh, yeah, remember when we got our ass kicked. Remember when we got our ass kicked. Why do we always have to talk about getting our ass kicked? I'd like to talk about how we kicked ass. But we don't ever do that. And I think it's the reason why we have a generation of people in this country that look down their nose on the military, and they look down their nose on that kind of sacrifice. And they think war is bad and everything, is because they continually get this message about how we got our asses kicked. Well, we didn't. We won the Second World War, you know.
Well, that's pretty clear.
Well, if it's clear, I don't hear. We do more remembering Pearl Harbor than we do remembering when we dropped a bomb on the Japs.
Okay, now, I got to ask you not to say that word, okay? It's 2011. I know...
I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot. When we bought the... You don't want me to say the NIPS either, do you?
No, I'd rather you not just say Japanese.
All right. Pearl Harbor. And... Hold on for a minute. I got to get some water.
I'm sorry, Harvey. I forget that this is tough for you, huh?
What's tough for me?
Yeah, I mean, doing all of this talking.
No, it's not tough for me. What do you think I'm made out of anyway? I just need water. That's all. Get Grandpa some water, okay? All right. We do more remembering of how we got our ass beat than we remember about when we... You know, got the whole thing over with by dropping an A-bomb and saying, and looking out the window of the airplane and saying, are you feeling me? You know, what do the kids say today, Phil? Do you feel it?
Do you feel me?
Do you feel? That's right. When we dropped the A-bomb on the Japans, we should have looked out the window and said, do you feel me? Huh? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that what you're saying, you are reflecting an attitude that was a gung-ho, let's take them on and let's kick their ass, and that is, there's no question that was appropriate, I think. Today, however, what we're saying is that with the experience of time, especially the experience that we learned from the Europeans, whose their entire continent was a war zone for two world wars, that perhaps that's not something we want to repeat. That we do want to remember there is the loss of life and that there is the tragedy of that. And
Well, look, Phil, there's plenty of remembering of the loss of life on Memorial Day. You've heard of Memorial Day, I take it.
Of course I have.
All right, well, that's when we remember those that have gone before. That's when we remember the loss of life, all right? But individual defeats, like Pearl Harbor, we might as well, why don't we just raise the rising sun and, you know... Do that whole the Japanese national anthem. I'm going to find that. Terry, get the Japan.
What are you doing?
I want to get the Japan national anthem.
What are you going to do that for?
I'm going to play it because that's what we ought to be playing today or tomorrow. Get the Japan national anthem. I don't care how you do it. I don't care where you got to go. Get it. I don't care if you got to put a gun in someone's ribs.
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to my daughter, if you'll excuse me. Is that all right with you?
Yes, that's fine. I'm just... You should be talking to me, and we'll talk to the people on the show.
I understand that, but I'm talking to my daughter. Get the Japan, yeah. Yeah, that's what I said, Japan. No, get the Japanese Empire.
Well, what are...
What is wrong with you, Phil? What are you doing? I'm asking my daughter to go get the Japan national anthem at...
Japan?
That's what I just said.
Japan?
You know, you talk like you got some kind of spaz, like you're spaz. I said Japan.
No, you said Japan. All right, so she's going to get the Japan national anthem.
What are you talking like a spaz for?
Would you not say that word and all of these other...
Where am I in America? You know, since I got on the radio with you, I've been told, can't say that word, can't say that word, and you can't say that word. What did I go to war for? What did we all come home from, you know, World War II, and we go and we defeated them, and I got to come back to the States and talk to some guy that wasn't even born, and you're telling me I can't say this and I can't say that?
I'm asking you, in deference to a great many people who also fought in that war that may be of Japanese descent. You know, the Rainbow Division, you know that?
The Rainbow Division? You're talking about the All... That wasn't the Rainbow Division.
Well, whoever the All-Japanese Division was.
The Rainbow Division. The All-Japanese Division was the All-Jap... That was the guys in Italy. Yes, they were fantastic soldiers. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones that we were fighting in... Boy, are you stupid, man.
Hey, Harvey, let me tell you something. We can hang the phone up and we can just do something else, okay? Other than talk to you.
I don't care.
Well, then don't call me stupid. And I'm sorry I said Rainbow Division.
Well, you get your facts straight, okay?
All right. The one that Daniel Inouye was in, those guys.
Yes, those guys were in Italy. They weren't where we were. We were in the Pacific. They were in the Army.
I understand. I'm saying that there were some soldiers of Japanese descent who fought for this country. In deference to them, can we not use the word J-A-P-S and N-I-P-S, and can we just say Japanese?
I didn't say those words. I said the other one. I said Japan.
Okay, fine. I mean, now there's the break. See, we've spent 5 minutes arguing about this crap.
That's okay. My daughter's going to get the... Did you get it? She's going to get the national anthem of the what do you want me to say?
Of Japan.
Of Japan. And I'm going to play it, because that's what we ought to be playing on the December 7th, because that's who won.
Phil Henry.
God.
World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
World Famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on this show. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't because it's just too ding-dang truthful. With us is Harvey Wireman. Mr. Wireman, a retired attorney, a veteran of the Second World War, and joining us to talk about Pearl Harbor. The 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor yesterday, and, or excuse me, not yesterday, today, tomorrow. It might be tomorrow. What am I doing here? Turn off the Led Zeppelin. Because we have this music, Harvey.
All right, I don't know what you just said. That was very...
I'm sorry, I got into that very dysfunctionally. I'm saying that tomorrow is the 70th anniversary of what happened on December 7th, 1941.
Yeah, and what happened was we lost, okay? Why are you and other people not, why do you not want to say on December 7th, 1941, we lost? Why don't you, you know, why don't you want to say that?
I'll say it. You know.
I'm a Marine. I fought for this country. You know, I know what it took to defeat the Japanese. And I'm glad that we did. So I can say... not proudly, but I say we got our ass handed to us at Pearl Harbor. Now, my daughter Carolyn went out and got the Japanese national anthem. Now, I want you to listen to this. This is what we should be playing tomorrow. Do you hear that?
Yes, I do.
All hail, rising sun. Nice going, baby. Sieg Heil. I don't know what they said. They didn't say Heil. They didn't say Hi Hitler.
Heil Hitler.
What was it? Yeah, there you go. There's the rising sun. Yeah. All right.
Don't you feel like you're disrespecting those soldiers on the Arizona?
Am I doing what? I can't hear you under the Japanese kabuki theater music.
Turn that down, will you please?
Oh, that was disrespectful to the Japanese anthem.
Don't you think you're being disrespectful to the men that died on the Arizona?
No, I do not think I'm being disrespectful. I'm telling it. Remember the guy, and he did the sports. What was his name? What was the guy's name?
Who?
The guy that did the sports. I'm telling it like it is. Howard Cosell. That's what I'm doing, telling it like it is. Those soldiers on Arizona were avenged by four bloody years of island hopping and rooting the Japanese out of every little rat hole we could find. And we used to call it, we used to say, we're delivering the groceries, or we had a paper route. You know what we meant by a paper route?
No.
They'd say, hey, better go deliver the paper route. And we'd just drop hand grenades in every hole we saw. And we would call down in Japanese, I forget what it was now, but we used to say something like, you know, New York Times, and we'd drop, you know, it broke up the boredom.
Boy, that's great. Phew, what a story.
Oh, well, excuse me. So I'm not supposed to have some laughs.
Laughs?
Bill, don't be judgmental.
Okay, but, hey, New York Times dropping hand grenades. I mean, to me, the whole thing is macabre. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We have a gentleman on the line here. Is it Rodney? Forget your name, sir.
Yes,
sorry.
Sir.
Yeah, go ahead, Rodney. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Harvey Wehrman. Go ahead.
What is this man's name?
Rodney.
Rodney.
How you doing, Rodney?
Has a negative opinion. I'm good. How are you? Not everyone
good,
has
man.
A negative opinion of the military. Just
oh, no, I know. Yes. Yeah, I know that. I know that. But I think that we have a generation of people that think you remember what I saw here in the news? Maybe you saw it, Rodney. The people in California, they were protesting the Marine Corps being in Berkeley. Do you remember that?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
There are people who may have not so favorable opinions of the military, but my maternal grandfather was in Pearl Harbor that day. So
what was her name?
The observance
of the
day is not always.
No, his safe. Grandfather. His grandfather.
I thought I said his grandmother.
His grandfather was at Pearl Harbor.
Right. Oh, all right, right, sir. Is he still alive?
No, no.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. But you got to understand something, Rodney. Your grandfather, was he killed at Pearl Harbor? Or was
no.
he?
No, okay. He wasn't. No.
We got beat. We got beat. And I only think it's right to say that. We got our ass beat. We got our asses beat by guys that later, after the war, became our gardeners. And
okay, why do you have to say that?
What?
Why do you have to say that?
What's that, sir?
The cliche, the perfect example there is the cliche of losing the battle but winning the war.
So well, what? You know, that's what people, yes, people say that.
War.
Well, you know, people have said that, and that's fine, but okay, we lost the battle. When do I get to celebrate winning the war? I never get to celebrate that, because if I do that, I'm a warmonger. So I got to every year suck on this. This is what this here is. Listen to this.
You can celebrate
every year,
you want, whenever you want. The rest of the world doesn't celebrate your birthday.
Every December 7th, I got to sit down on rice paper and go, hey.
What the hell are you talking about? This? Are you listening to what this man's saying?
Yes, I hear him.
Every day of your life, Harvey, you survived that war and came home to a great country, which it still is, and thank God, and we did win. We know we won because of the life that I have.
Well, you know what? I thank you and this young man, Rodney. You two guys are unique. You think about things like that. The rest of these clowns, all they want to talk about is how Alec Baldwin got cut pulling his you-know-what. Did you hear about what happened to Alec Baldwin? Did you hear about it, Rodney?
No,
what
I
about
sure
it?
Didn't.
Alec Baldwin got caught on an airplane pulling it.
No, he didn't. He got no, he did. He got caught on an airplane playing a. They threw him off because he was playing some stupid game.
No, he did not. They found he had his hand in his pants.
No, he did not. He was playing someone as. God.
Well, you're talking to me like I'm weird. You know, that's the part that gets me about him, Rodney. But every December 7th, I got to listen to the Japanese anthem. Because that's... Anyway, you're a good man, Rodney, and my very best to your grandmother or your grandfather, who's no longer with us, but he didn't die at Pearl Harbor. That's weird.
That's right. That's right. But he died on December 7th.
Here it is. I bet you when your grandfather was winging his way to heaven, he heard this.
No, that's great.
I don't know about
that. I'm only kidding, Rodney. I'm kidding, Rodney.
Rodney, thanks for your call, man.
877.
Can we turn that down, please?
No, we're not turning it down. You're going to listen to it and love it. It's your anthem, Henry.
Get this out of here. God.
I wanted to find out, what did they say in Germany? Hi, Hitler.
Heil. Why didn't you know that, man? That's your generation.
I wasn't over there. I was in the Pacific.
Well, it was in all the news. You heard of Hitler, didn't you?
Yeah, I heard of Hitler. But I thought they were saying, hi, Hitler. Hi, Hitler.
Oh, get out of here. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. You know something, Phil? You seem to think that because a guy doesn't have every single little pimple of history under his fingernails, that he's some kind of a dumbass. There's certain things some people don't know.
So you thought all those people in Germany going, hi, Hitler?
Yes, and they had the hand up.
I don't believe you. Nobody's that dumb.
Dumb?
That's exactly right. No one's that stupid. Hi, Hitler. Okay, any other ways that we can, be disrespectful to December 7th? You let me know, huh?
Hey, hold on for just... I'm not being... Now, you just keep one thing in mind, young man. I lost a lot of friends in that conflict, okay?
And well, then you should talk a little bit more respectfully.
Are you telling me? Is that what you're doing? You're telling me?
Yes.
You are telling me?
Yes, I'm telling you.
You're telling me, a guy that was there, that I can't have a couple of laughs. Is that what you're doing? I just want to be clear, Phil. I'm not going to get mad. Are you telling me?
Yes, I am telling you. Yes.
I can't have a couple of lousy laughs, a couple of cheap laughs, just so I can brighten my otherwise dead life. I'm 90 years old. I can't listen to this.
Get out of here, will you?
Get him back on the phone?
Well, get him back on the phone. Tell him I'm sorry I hung up. But I'm not going to keep listening to him playing that and him making jokes and hi, Hitler, and he's acting like a real jackass. His whole thing is this. He's old, and he's decided that he wants to disrespect everything and everybody, and even Pearl Harbor, even the memorial, not the memorial, but even the anniversary of the day, because, that's Harvey, man. Once he gets his mind set on something, he's just decided. If he decides that he's going to fart in the middle of a garden party, man, you better turn on the fan.
No kidding.
All right, Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with our news and information hour. It's coming up next hour, so we'd like you to join us for that. Also, there's going to... Will you turn that off? Also, a couple of things to announce ahead on our website. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, live from the El Pacifico each and every night, and on Saturday evenings from 7 to 10 as we do our Saturday night video cast. If you'd like to watch us then, you may. And we're going to start doing football Sunday, generally the second game or the late game, possibly the evening game. You can join us here in our studio as we comment and otherwise watch the football game, throw things at the TV set, and do things that that other people do. Here's a story, and I think we have Jeff Dowder next hour, I'm not sure, calling in on this. Jeff Dowder is a part-time professor of mechanical physics at Caltech. The Voyager. Now, do you know Voyager? This was a satellite that was launched by NASA in 1977, and you've, I'm sure, heard of Voyager in popular culture. I think it was the subject, and I believe that's what Dowder is going to be talking with us about, the subject of a Star Trek movie. Voyager was the first spacecraft, Voyager 1, I should say, was the first of two Voyager spacecraft launched by NASA. And as I say, it was launched in 1977, and it would do flybys. It did, in fact, flybys of certain planets, if not all the planets in the solar system. I don't think all of them. I think it was primarily to take photographs of three planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and the planet that I know is now going to give Bud a big laugh.
Uranus.
That's right. There, you feel good?
Yeah, you feel better now? You got to say it.
God, you did fly by Uranus. Ha ha ha.
God, what a baby, man.
You thought it was funny, too.
All right. There, you got to say it, okay? Three planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus. One of which we now know, two of which actually have rings.
Yeah, I bet it does.
All right, Bud, you got your joke out of the way. Shut up. Two of which have rings, Saturn and Uranus.
You want to hit him?
Don't hit him, no. But if you laugh one more time, just like they do in courtrooms, when the bailiff and the judge says, if there's any more snickering, I'll have your ass thrown out.
Judges don't talk like that.
Oh, really? Well, this judge does, okay? Judge Hendry.
What is this, Judge Phil?
Yeah, it's the Judge Phil court. And Judge Phil is saying, if you laugh one more time, I'm throwing you out of my courtroom. See? That's how they do it in the courtrooms.
Yeah, the Judge Phil show. You don't have no TV show. Dr. Phil does, though.
Hey, Bud, shut up.
I'll kick his ass if you want.
Yeah.
I will, man.
All right, easy, easy. I'm trying to do a story here. Would you shut up? So anyway, interesting story, just as a side note. I was working at that time in 1979 at a rock and roll station, a rock station here in Los Angeles called K-West. And I did a comedy bit every afternoon, a little feature. And one of them had to do with Voyager. Well, anyway, the guys at JPL thought it was funny, and they sent me, I was blown away because I thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. They sent me large poster, roll-up poster photographs of Jupiter and Saturn, full color, big posters of Jupiter and Saturn that were taken by Voyager. Amazing pictures, truly amazing pictures. And of course, since then, you guys, we've all seen them and many more like them. Voyager has taken, since then, 1979, all the way to now, 22 years, it is now entering a region of stagnant solar wind and magnetic pressure. What's basically happening is it's on the precipice of crossing over into interstellar space. Now, what is interstellar space? Basically, it's in that part of the universe, in that part of the galaxy, the Milky Way, where it is not subject really to the gravitational pull or effects of any star. Right now, the sun, which is our star, our solar system, right now it's affecting Voyager. There is a region of solar wind and magnetic pressure that I think is being exerted by our sun. But what that is, we'll talk to Dr. Dowder about that. Or Professor Dowder, I should say.
You ain't no doctor.
I know, Professor Dowder. Moving around the perimeter of the Milky Way galaxy, the sun, our sun, generates a wind of charged particles moving out in all directions. Ahead of the sun, the solar wind is compressed like the waves in front of a moving ship by a steady flow of plasma emanating from outside the solar system. God. Anyway, the solar particles are mostly diverted down and up, then behind the sun, like a ship's wake or a comet's tail. That's what, I guess, Voyager. No spacecraft has ever left the solar system before. So Voyager 1 is flying through an uncharted void between the influence of the sun and the interstellar wind, which blows waves of plasma and charged particles at a clip of up to 15 miles per second. That transition may not be instantaneous, said one of the doctors that they interviewed at JPL. It may take us months to get through a rather messy interface between these two winds. I mean, how we know, it takes far better people than me, obviously, to know what this is, man, these interstellar winds. But anyway, the latest data from Voyager shows the spacecraft is in a region of stagnation where the stream of charged particles from the sun is slowed and the sun's magnetic field has piled up. Point is, Voyager 1 is now 11 billion miles from the sun.
Wow, seriously?
11 billion miles. So let's talk about this. It took 22 years for Voyager to go 11 billion miles, and it's no nearer to another star than it's just now leaving the influence of our star, our solar system. 11 billion miles, 22 years. What makes us think What makes us think we're going to find any...
What?
What makes us think we're going to be traveling space and finding cats that live on other planets and all this jazz, man? 22 years to get out of this solar system?
Yeah, but they're going to have like a speed of light and everything.
Oh, sure. You just keep right on watching TV, man.
Well, don't you think it's possible?
I don't know what's possible, bud, but I'll tell you one thing. I ain't watching Star Trek to find out. I'll listen to scientists, thank you very much.
Star Trek had a lot of, you know, information.
I'll listen to scientists, thank you.
But if you watch Star Trek, the warp coil.
Yeah, thank you, I'll listen to scientists, you know.
But you don't think none of that is possible?
I don't know whether it is or not, Robert. But one of the problems with, many of us is, wow, can we travel through interstellar space? I know, let's watch Star Trek and find out. You know, not going to happen with me, you know.
Yeah, but you don't have an open mind.
Oh, I don't have an open mind? What do you mean I don't have an open mind, man? I got an open mind. If I'm talking to scientists or I'm, you know, listening to them.
Yeah, you're going to talk to a scientist. You don't even know what he's talking about.
I don't, maybe I don't, but I ain't going to listen to some cat on Star Trek. You know?
Then why do you watch it?
Because it's fun to watch, man. It's fun to watch. I'm watching Star Trek to figure out whether I'm going to be able to fly through the speed of light. You know, I'm watching Star Trek for kicks. That's it, dude. Not finding out any scientific. That's the problem with you, bud. You watch Star Trek, whoa, we could go to the speed of light.
What about a wormhole?
Yeah, the wormhole, man, they don't know.
Yeah, they do. Or they think they do.
Oh, they think they do, huh? All of that stuff is theory, man. Theory. All that jazz you see on Star Trek, all of that is theory. Some scientist's theory that Star Trek said, well, hell, let's plug it into a script, you know, and see if people, you know, see if it works.
They did the whole Deep Space Nine and everything on it.
Great. Wonderful. They got a TV series out of it. There you go, bud. Hey.
Yeah, all that science, man. We got one TV series.
No.
Yeah, they got the wormhole, and I'll tell you, that was such a fantastic scientific discovery, we got a whole TV series out of it. I'm telling you, bud, you got to wise up, man. You know, all that stuff is great. We don't know whether that stuff exists or not. Right now, here's what we know. This is what we know. 22 years to get 11 billion miles. That much we know. That ain't going to take me to Klingon, man. That ain't getting me any closer to the Vulcans, Jack. That's 22 years to get out into some solar wind. No thank you. All right, we'll be back with our News and Information Hour, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and Jeff Dowder next hour to talk about this.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We are here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, Saturday night, 7 to 10 on Phil TV and HD, locally here in the El Pacifico area. So if you don't pick up radio from El Pacifico where you are, because we're only on our local station here, then by all means, join us. Here on Phil TV and HD, we are on KTLK in Los Angeles during the weekday, and we're on KFI on Saturday nights, but it is a local show. But you can still join us here for it at Phil TV and HD on our website. And a couple of things to mention. One is that our Best of 1994, which is from our days in Miami, and a very significant Best of CD indeed, is available for download at philhendryshow.com. Either completely, the entire CD, or individual cuts. So you can head over there and pick that up, as well as other things in our souvenir shop, including what I'm wearing right now. Those of you who are watching us on Phil TV, the Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse hoodie. It is black, blue, and white, the blue and white Ted's of Beverly Hills logo. And then on the back, if I get on camera three here, there you are, is the slogan of Ted's of Beverly Hills, "We want to put our meat in your mouth." So...
Dude, I can't believe he gets away with that.
Ted doesn't want it to be crude, so why don't you stop making it crude? It's a very literal steak, is what he means. So there's a number of things you can avail yourself of there. Get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. Very, very quick news item here. Alec Baldwin, who is always causing some trouble. No, he's not, but he, you know, people, he bugs people. You know, he doesn't bug me, you know.
He don't bug you. You know, that guy's politics are totally opposite yours. He don't bug you?
He doesn't bug me, no. He doesn't bug me. So what if his politics are opposite mine? Look, I can't expect everybody to agree with me. He can't expect everybody to agree with him. That's the way of the world. That's how it is. He's going to be outspoken. He's always been an outspoken guy. You know, if I didn't like him as an actor, I wouldn't talk about him at all. I'd probably think he was a pain in the ass then, but I actually like him in
what movie do you like him in?
I thought he was great in The Departed, you know?
No, that was a great movie.
Yeah, I liked him too.
In The Departed, he was great. I thought he was fantastic in that movie. I don't know. You know, some of the flicks that I see him in. Anyway, now, I can't get the straight scoop. Was he thrown off the plane, or did he just get off the plane because the pilot was bugging him, or what? But his love for the cell phone game Word with Friends, which Fred Scotty tells me his girlfriend is addicted to, got him in trouble on an American Airlines flight on Tuesday. Alec Baldwin's addiction to the cell phone game got him booted from an American Airlines plane parked at L.A. International at a gate on Tuesday afternoon, according to the actor's spokesman. He loves WWF so much, is that what it's called, Word with Friends, that he was willing to leave a plane for it, but he's already boarded another AA flight, spokesman Matthew Hitzig said in an email to CNN. It was unclear whether Baldwin was told to leave because he had refused to turn off the device. Well, then, what are you talking about, CNN, saying he got booted from the plane? You lousy, crappy, stinking, rotten news service. Baldwin used one of his other technological addictions, Twitter, to make sure the world knew that he was not happy about it. Oh, so I guess he was kicked off. One tweet took aim at the crew, saying he would never again fly on American Airlines, where retired Catholic school gym teachers from the 1950s find jobs as flight attendants. Now, that's low class, very low class.
What do you mean by that?
Retired Catholic school gym teachers from the 1950s find jobs. So in other words, they're old, and they're probably frumpy and ugly in the eyes of Alec Baldwin, who is old and frumpy and bugly, and bugly too.
You said bugly.
Yeah, but ugly.
But ugly's bugly.
Anyway, in a statement, American Airlines said the company would not comment on something that might or might not have happened. A posting on the airline's Twitter account showed the company was trying to reach Baldwin. Mr. Baldwin, we're looking into this. Please DM us contact information. That's something that they would never do for anybody else. So now I don't like either one of them.
Why don't you like American Airlines?
I can't stand you. I'm telling you right now, I cannot stand you companies that are willing to placate a celebrity when you pull this stuff, whether or not you were right. Let's say that this was something that you were right about. On second thought, let's say it's something you were wrong about. That you were flat wrong. You know as well as I do that if this had not been Alec Baldwin, just some run-of-the-mill chump change passenger, you would not feel compelled to apologize. You wouldn't do a thing. You sure as hell wouldn't go on Twitter and make an issue out of it. Now, I know what you're going to say to me. You're going to say, well, Mr. Baldwin is so prominent that we have to defend ourselves. Let me tell you something. I've seen this a million times. I've seen it a million times. These companies do a bad job. They don't know how to do their job right. They may blow it in any number of different ways, and they get called on it by somebody who has a radio show, or they get called on it by someone who has a TV show, or they get called on it by a prominent person. And all of a sudden, well, my goodness, they are at your service. Now, if you would give that kind of attention to just run-of-the-mill, rank-and-file customers who don't have a radio shows and TV show, if you would attend to them with that kind of promptness and energy and attentiveness and focus, you wouldn't have any problems at all. People would love you. You would have customer loyalty until the cows came home. Maybe after the cows came home. Maybe after the cows got dressed, took a shower, got undressed, took a shower, and went to bed.
What?
Never mind. In a statement, American Airlines, okay, so they went and they tried to suck his kneecaps after he said that your flight attendants looked like gym teachers and they were a bunch of frumpy old ugly bags. This is the very liberal Alec Baldwin, who I'm sure stands for women's rights most of the time. But not if he gets his ass thrown off an airplane for screwing around with some stupid game on a cell phone. What a nitwit.
A minute ago, you said you liked him.
I do like him. He's still a nitwit. I like him as an actor. So the guy can get up, he can do anything he wants in the movies. I really like that. As a guy, he sounds like a real jackass. Words with Friends is a digital word-building game popular on several platforms. Well, that's great. The first indication of trouble was posted on Twitter by Michael J. Wolf, a consulting firm executive who was a passenger on the flight. On an American Airlines flight at LAX, Alec Baldwin removed from the plane. We had to go back to the gate. Terrible that everyone had to wait, Wolf tweeted. A short time later, Baldwin tweeted to his nearly 600,000 followers, flight attendant on American Airlines reamed me out for playing Word with Friends while we sat at the gate, not moving. If they told you to turn off your device, you stupid clown. When CNN anchor Brooke Baldwin, no relation, tagged Alec Baldwin in a tweet asking about Word with Friends, the actor replied, it's, well, addicting. The star of NBC's 30 Rock noted in his tweets that, oddly, 30 Rock plays in-flight on American. Despite the apparent distress, I realize I was very,
Yeah, it's getting kind of a...
Sort of one note there. Despite the apparent distress, Baldwin's journey, destination unknown, resumed. Out over the Pacific, Baldwin, who had gotten up to use the can, was thrown from the aircraft after they kicked open the emergency door. No, he just joking, of course. They don't know where he's going. Even American Airlines doesn't know where he's going. Now, on the 3 o'clock American flight, the flight attendant already looks smarter, he tweeted. CNN's Jack Hanna and Douglas Hyde contributed to this report.
I thought that would sound kind of bad when he said about a flight attendant.
Yeah, sounded bad. Sounds ignorant, sounds disrespectful. If it was anybody else, I mean, this is a ridiculous world that we live in, man. Some of the stuff that some people get away with. If it had been the kind of person that an Alec Baldwin, for instance, doesn't like, I don't know who, let's see if it was, I don't know, just name it. Name any conservative. If they had said what he just said about the flight attendants, it would have been, I hate women. It would have been, All right, so there is that. We'll keep you up to date. I think we have Dr. Dowder, Professor Dowder, or whatever the hell, Jeff Dowder coming up in a moment to talk about Voyager and this whole intergalactic bullcrap that we're talking about. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night here till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Hope you're enjoying your evening. We thank you for being with us. We'll be right back. Hold on right after these special messages.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, it's time on an Iron Swine Show.
Yeah, this is an Iron Swine Show. And Alec Baldwin is playing a game on an airplane, and a flight attendant told him to stop, and he's not doing it.
Yeah, Iron Swine's got to come because the flight attendant called him up.
Hey, are you Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
Boy, you are... I'm not Iron Swine.
Yeah, you're not. You're just a flight attendant.
Yeah. Are you Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, I'm Alec Baldwin.
Hey, how come? You know, you better turn that off, man. We're gonna take off and everything.
No, I'm not going to. I'm Alec Baldwin. I'm going to play it.
Damn. You're pissing me off, man. I'm going to call Iron Swine.
I don't care. Go do whatever you think you need to be and everything.
Then I call up Iron Swine.
I'm Iron Swine. Alec Baldwin? Hey, Alec Baldwin.
What?
Turn off that game.
Ah, go to hell.
Why, you dirty? And now I open up the door. Ah! That's bitching. Iron Swine threw Alec Baldwin out of the door.
Iron Swine.
Do that again.
I'm Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, I'm throwing you out the door.
Ah!
That's bitching. Iron Swine.
Very good, guys.
Did I bitch you? Do it again.
Okay, he's done it enough. Alec Baldwin gets thrown out. Isn't that against the law?
What?
You're Iron Swine. You're there to enforce the law.
Yeah.
Well, you threw a suspect out of a window.
No, I didn't. Threw it out of a door.
I mean a door.
So?
Well, you're not supposed to do that, are you?
Yeah, I'm Iron Swine. When all else fails, Iron Swine comes in.
Oh, okay. Seems like a very harsh crime for,
Yeah, but he's keeping a plane on the ground and everything.
Yeah. You know, I mean, in other words, Iron Swine is a cop, but he has special, you know, duties and stuff.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. He has special, he can go ahead and be, he's like Superman or something.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. But it just seems like a very harsh penalty for a guy that won't turn his damn cell phone off to throw him out of the aircraft at how many thousands of feet up?
I don't know. Make a big deal out of it.
just asking. All right, very good. So that's Iron Swine here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and he threw Alec Baldwin clear out of the plane. That's
right, that's how he does it, on Iron Swine.
Yes, thank you. All right, we're going to bring on Jeff Dowder with us here to talk about the this news that we had on Voyager. And Jeff is with us from from Temple City tonight. Jeff, I'm glad you came on with us. I appreciate it very much. How are you this evening?
I'm doing good, Phil, and thank you for, your interest in the NASA program and your interest in the JPL, and certainly your interest and your listeners' interest in the Voyager program, which has been ongoing since 1977. I did hear your comments, Phil. I just wanted to correct one small thing. It has been, in point of fact, 24 years. Going on 20...
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Why did I say 22? I guess 22 since 79 when it passed Jupiter.
That is correct. Yeah, it passed Jupiter 2 years into the mission. And so you can see that it did reach a point in the solar system that was quite a long way from Earth, even within a two-year period of time. But the understand about it is that... that the Voyager was taking a course that was mapped out by NASA, that it was able to reach these planets at the optimum time. So it wouldn't take like 2 years. It would take 2 years to get to Mars or something, you know.
And so why did it take only 2 years to get as far as Jupiter?
Because, like I said, it was not. Trying to hit all of the planets and everything. It was going on a more of a direct route and everything like that. But anyway, you want to talk about Voyager and
this is a fascinating story of Voyager. The fact that Voyager now is on the verge of interstellar space. The fact that Voyager, and that means it's leaving the solar system, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's leaving the solar system, and when they say interstellar space, is basically right what that means about it. It's between, you want to turn that down? Hey, Toby, turn it down. What? Yeah, turn it down. It's interstellar space, which basically means that it is, like you were saying, Phil, between stars. And it's in an area of, it's in an area of the galaxy or beyond a solar system, our solar system, where it's... between the gravitational pull of our sun and the gravitational pull, say, of another star and any planets that may be orbiting that. So it's really sort of in that no man's land. But like you was also saying, there's other galactic elements. There's other, atmosphere, or not atmospheric, but other astronomical factors like solar wind and like these hypercharged particles that you was talking about.
I think it's really interesting, Jeff, as I was talking to the audience, the fact that it's 11 billion years, or excuse me, 11 billion miles, you know?
Yeah.
11 billion miles that Voyager has traveled in these 24 years. That's a long way, and yet it's not even out of, or barely out of the solar system.
Yeah, I mean, you were absolutely right when you were saying about how even all of that space that it's covered, it ain't even close to being in any kind of people with on a planet or some deal like that, you know, because most of what they've been talking about are people who are hold on. Most of what they're doing
Okay, it sounds like you guys are hitting a bong there.
No, we're not. I'm sorry. Okay, most of really what is happening right now, Phil, has nothing really to do with any kind of hyperspace travel. I mean, it's just not going to happen, which brings us to the movie that you were talking about, which was Star Trek, the very first Star Trek movie.
Right. Now, that was a fascinating movie because they did, on some level, they dealt with the Voyager, the journey of Voyager, and what might have happened to Voyager.
Can you say that again?
You know what, Jeff? If you guys are hitting a bong...
No, I'm not. No, I am not.
Because I just heard it.
That is very unfortunate. That's Toby Bo, who's...
I don't know who Toby Bo is.
You want to... Okay, could you rephrase your question, Phil?
Well, it's not... Voyager figures prominently in the Star Trek movie, the first Star Trek movie.
Okay. God.
Would you get...
Get out of here, man. Get out of here. It does, Phil, and... Oh, wow, look at that. Is that ski jumping?
Hey, you're on the radio with me, man.
I'm sorry. There's, Voyager... You know...
If you're stoned, man, and that's fine. You know, I mean, I'm not gonna... You know?
No, I'm not. No. I mean, I'm talking to you.
Well, what is this? Hey, wow, is that skiing?
What?
Just tell me what's the thing with the movie? Not that I care.
Well, I wanted to point out that in the Star Trek movie, Voyager, which is what we're talking about, the satellite that has been sent on a, you know, out of the thing, that, what was I talking about?
You're talking about Voyager and Star Trek.
Voyager and Star Trek was, in the movie, Voyager goes out into space and comes back after having had some kind of sexual encounter with another race, okay? And it could be the Borg. I think that that's the theory that has been... You know, floated, or it's been floating, you know, it's been floating out there about...
About what?
About how Voyager went in the movie Star Trek, Voyager went into interstellar space and somehow was abducted or, I mean, this is really what happened to it, I shouldn't say, it got raped by the Borg, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, Toby, is that... Because Toby wrote a paper on this for his chem-ed class, and that's what he said, that the Borg raped it. So,
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
I'm talking about Voyager getting raped.
Voyager got raped by the Borg?
Yeah, the ones in Star Trek. And as a result of that, it came... Oh, man.
Well, you guys are hitting bongs. I can't understand anything you're saying.
Okay, let me just say it. It got raped by the Borg, and it came back, and then it raped one of the Star Trek crew members. It raped the captain. Is that right? I think, I don't know.
Phil.
Toby. Toby, what happened? You saw it. What happened?
World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, God, what they do?
That's fine, man, but welcome back to the program. Now I'm having an argument or a discussion here with Bud Dickman about whether Voyager got raped by the Borg. That, first of all, that was a ridiculous and nasty comparison, okay?
Why?
Because what happened to Voyager is it became fused with another life form. That's not what Jeff said. Took on the characteristics in part of another life form. It came back to Earth. It came back to the humans that threw it out there. A lot of you younger people may not be aware of this. I think this is Voyager. If I'm wrong, I may be wrong. But the Voyager spacecraft has on it a map of the Earth and the solar system. It has a picture of a man and a woman. It has music. In other words, the reason why the film was made that way is to take advantage of what had been put on Voyager by NASA. Examples of humankind in case Voyager was intercepted or otherwise was discovered by another race, that they would know who we are, what we like, you know.
What kind of music do you have on here?
They had, like, the one I remember was Chuck Berry.
What? Why'd they put that?
What do you mean, why'd they put that? Because it's representative. It was representative of 20th century life, you know.
Yeah, but what'd they put? Did they put a hip-hop or anything? Or I guess there wasn't.
Hip-hop? It was 1977, okay? What do you want? Oh, yeah, you're right, bud. Maybe they should have looked into the future and grabbed some Beastie Boys or something. I don't know.
No, but put on some, maybe, I don't know, Outkast, something like that.
They couldn't do it in 1977. Do you understand? So they did what they could do. Now, that was the reality, and so what they did when they made the movie is, I take it, they decided to play with that in the film, and Voyager is discovered by, in point of fact, is discovered by an alien race of some kind, and comes back imprinted with that alien race's own characteristics, i.e., it's turned Voyager into something other than what it was. And when it finally does return to humankind, in this case, it's discovered by the crew of the Enterprise. One of the crew, played by that actor, I forget the guy's name.
I can look it up, man, but I know the guy you're talking about.
Yeah, that guy, and this is why I didn't like the movie. The movie ended this way. That dude has sex with, doesn't have sex with it, but.
But a dude, did it mount it?
Shut up, bud, okay?
Sure, or Voyager probably, Voyager mounted the guy.
No, Voyager. He communed with Voyager, he melded together with Voyager. He became man-machine. With a stupid, asinine ending. I hated that movie. And I was just saying to the guys, you know, the Star Trek movies, if I didn't, when I saw that flick, I thought, oh, they suck. Get out of here with these movies. And I was prepared not to see another one. But then the next one that came out, and I think they saved the franchise personally, because I think a lot of people felt the way I did. That was a really disappointing flick. It was asinine. It was silly. But the next one that they came out with was Wrath of Khan, which was an extension or sequel of one of the TV episodes.
That flick was pretty good.
Yeah, that was a great flick. And it had Ricardo Montalban reprising his part. And they had that little bug they put in people's ears.
Man, that bug in the guy's ear, that creeped me out.
That scared me too.
Well, in any event, that's what that was in the flick. So that movie, I think, saved it. It saved that whole franchise. I swear to God, I mean, if they hadn't come out with a good, strong second Star Trek movie, and that was strong enough, I think it would have been over, because that first one really blew. All right, enough about that. Thank you very much, Professor Doubter, or whoever you are, or whatever you are. What a jackball, man. Somebody get the bong away from Toby Bo. What's he doing hanging out with that guy?
Toby Bo is the guy that helps him out with a lot of his research.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'll bet he does. Speaking of being in outer space, U.S. Federal Aviation Administrator Randall Babbitt resigned after a December 3rd arrest for driving while intoxicated that his boss learned through a police press release. Man, you don't want that to happen, Jack. His boss at the United States FAA found out that Mr. Babbitt had been arrested on December the 3rd for a DUI, or in some states it's a DWI, because a police press release had it on there. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood accepted the resignation today, according to an emailed statement from Babbitt. Mr. Babbitt, his age 65, was arrested after police spotted him driving on the wrong side of the road in Fairfax, Virginia. That'll do it, man.
Man, that's drunk.
Oh, yeah, that's real drunk. We have the safest aviation system in the world. Look at this. The guy gets arrested for drunk driving. We don't want you to think that we don't have safe flying. I mean, the guy was on the ground. No, actually, the statement said, it's a very nice statement, he said, we have the safest aviation system in the world, and thanks to Randy's stewardship, it became safer and stronger, said Ray LaHood in a separate emailed statement. On behalf of the American people, I thank him for his service and his leadership, but you're fired. No, he didn't say that, but that's basically what happened.
I don't get it.
What don't you get?
Well, I mean, they gotta say that.
Well, but they said that. I don't get why he said a lot of good stuff.
Because that's what they do, man, when you have agreed that you will resign rather than force them to fire you. And they say, if you will resign, we will part as friends, and you'll have severance, and you'll probably have your, no doubt he has his pension, you know. So they basically said, why don't you go ahead and resign and take your freaking retirement, take your pension, and just get out of our faces. And if you do that, we will have a beautiful statement that we'll make to the press. You're a great guy, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
That's how it's done, bud. That's how it's done, okay? It doesn't have to be ugly. It doesn't have to be ugly. The guy was drunk. He got arrested. It was a scene that they don't need. They decided to get him out of there. And he acceded to that. LaHood told reporters in Washington today, and that would be Tuesday, yesterday, that he had learned of Babbitt's arrest from the police press release yesterday, meaning Monday. Babbitt went on leave after officials learned of the arrest. The FAA's deputy administrator, Michael Huerta, who has been in the job since June of 2010, was named acting FAA leader, the Transportation Department said. That's very interesting. LaHood has spoken out on drunk driving to improve safety on U.S. highways. A year ago, he announced a crackdown on drivers who drink during the holidays. So obviously, one of his FAA administrations getting busted for drunk driving is not cool. This guy's the transportation secretary. Not good, man.
Yeah, I'm driving on the wrong side of the road. Are you kidding me, man? Man, if I worked for the U.S. Transportation, I wouldn't even drink.
What, are you crazy?
No, I'm not crazy. Why would I drink and run that risk?
Why would you work for the U.S. Transportation?
Because I don't care what I drink or not.
What about you, bud?
I wouldn't work for him because I like drinking beer.
Yeah, well, that's the difference between you and me. And you go to work for him.
No, I said I wouldn't go to work for him.
Said he wouldn't go to work for them. Because he knows he likes drinking beer. Is that, and you drink and drive?
No.
Yeah, you do, man. That's why you...
I said no. Don't you... No's no.
All right. We understand. Boy, what a waste of time listening to you jackasses talking about whether you'd work for the FAA. What makes you think they'd hire you? LaHood has spotted... What am I saying here? LaHood was spotted drinking... No, I'm kidding. Yes, Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood himself has been arrested while driving on the wrong side of the road. However, being the Transportation Secretary, no one can fire him except the President. Anyway, an FAA administrator, Babbitt oversaw drug and alcohol testing program for the agency's air traffic controllers and for U.S. airline pilots. Commercial pilots must report drunk driving convictions to the FAA. Very, very important, man. You don't want cats flying and drinking, you know.
Didn't you say you had to have a drug test one time?
Yeah, yeah. Not because I was using drugs.
No, I don't. What for?
When I went to work for another company, I went to work for a company, a broadcast company. And I don't know whether I should say who. Well, I guess it doesn't matter. CBS. And CBS required at that time, I don't know if they do anymore, in 1993, they required a drug test to make sure that you were not some hophead. That didn't bother me because I don't use drugs. And
what about alcohol?
They weren't testing for that. They were testing for weed. I think they were testing for illegal substances. I think what you're asking about, Robert, is where?
Yeah, you had to let go off a freeway or something.
No, I mean, what it was this. I said, well, okay, I was in Atlanta. I was going to Minneapolis. I was going to work for a CBS station in Minneapolis. I said, where the hell do I go to get a drug test? Do I go to my doctor? And then they go, no. They got drug testing places where you go, where just for that specific, like where? Well, most of them are off the freeway because of the truckers. I said, oh, because the truckers got to get drug tested. Yeah. So I literally, right off the interstate, was one near where I lived. And I went in there, man, and I, did my drug test. And they, I guess, sent it on up to my prospective employer. And that was that.
What did it come out as?
It came out negative, bud.
It came out negative, man. It said it on you.
I know. I just want to know.
It was negative. So, but it was interesting that of the places, the labs that they recommended to me, they were all very accessible to interstates, you know, right off the off-ramp. Bang, there's a drug testing place. You know, just go on in there, man, and get your blood pulled. And I was talking to the nurse, and we've all heard the stories, that some of the twists and flips that some of these cats go through to make sure that their drug test comes out, you know, okay, especially if they've been using pills or they've been smoking weed, or God knows what else, going in there with other people's urine.
You kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. Can you imagine that? So, yeah, I had to do that. So that's the story there of Mr. Randy Babbitt. Well, I guess the moral of the story is our government is hard at work, you know, throwing people out of work if they even have. Nowadays, you can't screw around, man. You can't screw around. You just can't do it. I don't care. It shocks me beyond all belief that we, to be honest with you, the Penn State thing blows my mind. The Syracuse thing blows my mind. You know, it's been said by smarter guys than me, man, are you out of your mind? Would you ever risk in your wildest dreams, would you ever risk in your craziest moments, risk your career, risk your reputation, risk the institution that you work for, having any, any possible appearance of impropriety with kids? Who are these guys? How stupid do you have to be? Well, I don't think it's stupid at all. I think there's something wrong. Well, the same thing with this. You want to go to work for this guy or that guy or whatever you want to do, when you're just going to have to not have a drug test that shows that you're using drugs. Because there's no excuse anymore. And now, as far as kids and what this guy Sandusky is accused of, and that other guy at Syracuse, I forget that guy's name, they finally fired him. You know, if there's enough people, you know, I hate to say where there's smoke, there's fire, because it's such a cliche, obviously, but it's one of the more applicable cliches. In fact, it's probably one of the strongest of all the cliches. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't mean some crazy woman who's looking to ruin someone's reputation, making all kinds of claims that aren't true. I'm talking about where a guy has had multiple parents saying, hey, wait a second, this guy, you know, and multiple kids, and over a long period of time, and it's one guy, it's not a whole institution. So the moral of the story is the following thing, and poor Joe Paterno, you know, I do feel kind of bad for the guy. Time just caught up with Joe and blew right by him. The events of the day, the way that the human race, the society is evolving around him, it just blew right past Joe Paterno. Man, he's had his face in football games all of his life. He hasn't paid enough attention to what the world is turning around him, and the things that the world concerns itself with. But you know, let the word go out now, in case there's anybody that has any doubts, in case the Paterno thing escaped them, in case the Syracuse thing has escaped them, in case any of the millions and millions and millions of cases of child abuse have escaped them, let the word just go out loud and clear to every jackass out there. No, 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 no. No, no, no. It's not tolerated. The abuse of kids, even the hint of impropriety, just stay the hell away from the kids, okay? And you'll be fine. Can't do it.
Yeah, there'll be some idiot, though.
Well, if there is, and there will be, of course, you're right. He's not an idiot. He's a psychopath. Doesn't give a damn about kids. But if you clowns out there, if there's somebody out there that actually has been unfairly accused, and you were in the wrong place the wrong time, who knows what the hell happened, keep your nose out of that whole situation. Stay the hell away from kids. Just be smart, because there's no tolerance for it anymore. There's none, period. Nobody is going to save your ass. Your ass is, there's nobody wants to deal with these people any longer. This guy Sandusky, every time he opens his mouth, he sounds more and more like an imbecile. Now, the most recent series of comments, where he was asked to clarify that statement to Bud Costas, or Bud, Bill Costas, Bob Costas. God, you know what? That's what I get for hiring a guy named Bud.
Bud Costas.
No, Bob Costas, where he said, "Am I sexually attracted to young boys? Am I sexually attracted?" You know, 16 seconds to say no. When he was asked to clarify it, he didn't even clarify it then. His lawyer had to come in and clarify it a third time. Do yourself a favor, Mr. Lawyer. Get this guy Sandusky, put a sock in his mouth. All right, we'll be back with our final segment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, including Angelina Jolie sued. Well, that's not right. Beautiful girl like that.
Yeah, it sucks.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Be right back.
Truth.
is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I got this because, you know, I was referring to this new interview with Sandusky. He said, well, now, what the hell is this? He gave it to the New York Times. Here is an entire report from ABC News. This is George Stephanopoulos. Let's listen to this.
The child sex scandal at Penn State University is back in the headlines tonight after those bombshell comments from former coach Jerry Sandusky to the New York Times. It's his second major interview, and ABC News now has exclusive reporting that his public comments are enraging his accusers and raising questions about his defense strategy. ABC's Jim Avila is on the case.
Jerry Sandusky may soon face his accusers. Prosecutors plan on calling all 8 alleged victims to testify at next week's preliminary hearing. ABC News has learned from sources close to the case that Sandusky's second high-profile interview has so incensed his accusers, they are anxious to tell their stories.
First, he serially abused my client. And then he has to hear Sandusky deny that he did those things.
Sandusky told the New York Times over the weekend he's being turned into a monster by prosecutors who are mistaking fatherly affection for sexual abuse.
Oh, boy.
I didn't do those things.
But when given yet another chance to answer the simple question of whether he is sexually attracted to children, the former coach needed off-camera coaching.
If I say, no, I'm not attracted to boys, that's not the truth, because I'm attracted to young people, boys, girls.
Yeah, but not sexually. You're attracted because you enjoy spending time.
Right. I enjoy, that's what I was trying to say. I enjoy spending time with young people. I enjoy spending time with people.
After two major on-camera fumbles, many wonder why the former football coach is talking at all.
I think people will get used to the fact that that's just the way Jerry responds to questioning, and that's the way he gives answers.
A legitimate but risky strategy, say critics.
He kept looking away. He wouldn't make eye contact. He was fidgeting. His legs, his hands were moving all about. And those are potential signs of deception that investigators look for.
A strategy Sandusky is having trouble pulling off. Jim Avila, ABC News, New York.
Man. How about that, huh?
Yeah, he's a douchebag.
Well, I mean, douchebag is, yeah, that's one way of looking at it. But the fact is, and I sort of understand when the guy says, well, you know, and a good lawyer, and that he's got a good lawyer. This guy is saying,
you know, that guy's not a good lawyer, man. He told that guy to talk on TV.
All right, well, what I'm saying is he did say this. He said, hey, people are going to use Jerry's weird the way he answers questions. You know.
Now, what do you mean the guy's weird? That one lady said he's
not making eye contact or nothing.
Yeah, I understand that. But what I'm saying is, you know, he sounds a little bit like he's trying to play, he's trying to convince me that he's some kind of a freaking moron, you know, or, well, if I say that I'm not attracted to boys, I mean, you know, like he doesn't know what they're asking? Come on, Jack.
Oh, you mean sexually? Yes,
that's what we mean.
Oh, well, you should have said so.
Well, dude, why do you think we're asking? Oh, man. Well, I'm sure all of this will, eventually be sorted out one way or a t'other. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It has been our pleasure to be with you. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, of course, produced by me, Phil Hendry, and of course, it is also produced by Fred Scotty and Dan Northcraft. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night here from the El Pacifico. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. We will see you guys tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Till then, big smooch.
Bye, everybody. Don't forget, stay away from Jerry Sandusky.
Sandusky.
Right.
Phil Hendry.